This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me Tan Chung Han, and it's Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal money. Our guest today is Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer at Affin Hwang Asset Management. Chief Learning Officer, something that I think the whole country needs, but never mind about that. We'll come to that issue later. Steve, before we begin on the question of financial reflection and, you know, kind of financial checkup, tell us, what does a Chief Learning Officer do? I mean, it's a real job. Can I get one?
Well, he's obviously getting a real paycheck for it, so.
Okay, so tell us, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Okay, essentially, it's just a fancier term to describe chief training officer. But we in Affin Hwang, we believe instead of being trained, we should have the initiative to learn. So part of my job is to create a learning environment. That's why we call it chief learning officer.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Is this an innovation, a kind of corporate innovation? Is this something that's come up in, say, the last 10 years or so? Or does it predate that?
No, I think if you look abroad in the more developed countries, they have got such positions.
Yeah. But just to get an idea, so how do you, you know, develop this learning environment, so to speak? And is this primarily skewed towards internal, for internal purposes, or you know, do you engage with external parties as well?
At the moment, we're trying to do it internally.
Okay.
Okay. Just give you an example, we have got like a, we call it bookspiration activities.
Bookspiration?
Yeah, where the appointed persons or team is supposed to pick up a book, read it, and share it with their colleagues on a regular basis.
Oh, like they do an executive summary of the book?
Yeah, sort of.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sharad, you do that all the time anyways. Yeah,
so okay. No, fascinating stuff. Because, of course, it leads to this other thing, which partly, I think, involves constant learning. The idea that when it comes to finances, we should start treating it seriously, as seriously as we treat our health, our physical health, right? Mm. And so there's this notion of financial reflection. And, Steve, maybe you could explain that a little. What is it that is meant to be in this expression, financial reflection?
Well, see, a listed company probably have to, they have to report their results on a quarterly basis. Private limited company have to report their results yearly. And this is very close to our heart. This is our personal finance. And yet, the only time we reflect on it is probably when we are doing our resolution at the end of the year or the beginning of the year, if we do it at all, or when we are doing our taxes before April 30th. So I guess the financial health is important. It's probably second to our own health. And there are time-sensitive things, that actions that we can do, that we have to do during the year. For instance, you forgot to upgrade your laptop. It's tax deductible. You forgot to contribute to a, what do you call it, the government savings plan for education, SSNet or something like that.
Well, I mean,
And all these things, if you don't commit during the year, you can't get a deduction. And on the investment side, there are certain things that we'll go a little bit into.
Okay,
later,
yeah. So the idea is being cognizant of your year, but your year, you know, you mentioned
calendar
resolutions,
year.
Yeah.
Calendar.
So you, yeah, calendar year is like you start 1st of January, ends 31st of December. Mm. When it comes to finances, is that the same year we're talking about, or should we actually start and end with the tax season and those dates?
The tax season is the year assessment season. That's the calendar year. Mm. So I think, well, we get our bonus typically after the financial year end of a company. So you typically get it like the first quarter. Mm. Okay. So I think it makes sense to plan your finances according to the calendar year rather than a special year that's specific to yourself. Unless you have got a very specific time frame that is relevant to yourself. Yeah. Mm. Otherwise, calendar year seems to be a good guide.
So, in finding opportunities to conduct some financial reflection, you know, how often should you recommend? What, once a year, twice a year? What's ideal here?
twice a year is fine. Okay, if you can do it quarterly, it's even better. Like certain aspect of your life, of your financial life, some has to be reviewed on a more regular basis than the other. Yeah, I'll get a little bit more into that later.
Okay.
So, okay, for us, I mean, I'm wondering about the people we speak to, you know, people in their 40s, 30s, they already have children, they have loans and such. I mean, is it, of course, one thing, is it too late to start? But also for them to perhaps look at their own children and the next generation and say, is financial planning and this kind of reflection and talk about financial health something that's exclusive to adults who are working and earning a salary, or do you actually need to start young with young kids?
The earlier you start, the better. It's a habit. It's something that you have to develop from very young. In fact, from the time when you're in high school, okay, your parents are supposed to give you an allocation, and you're supposed to be taught, okay, to split the allocation into on a weekly basis, then split it further to a daily. Okay, so you don't veer off the cost in regards to your spending.
Now, you use the word suppose because apparently I'm guessing you're not seeing that happen, right?
Yeah, not really. Mm.
You know, I think what's fascinating, because for children, you say a weekly. I remember, you know, when it wasn't weekly, when it could have been a daily allowance that you got because you just had to have just enough money for the tuck shop, right?
Yeah.
And so you kind of, all the prices were kind of reasonably stable. You didn't have expenses that were extraordinary. You didn't find yourself walking to a shopping mall and buying something because in my day, there wasn't a shopping mall. Shopping malls only emerged when I was a teenager.
Really?
Yeah, strangely enough.
You just dated yourself here. All right, so Steve, now that we have kind of set the context here, so if somebody wants to start, right, doing some financial reflection, how do they even begin? What do they look for?
Well, start by looking at their own budget. An ATM card is very, very convenient. And if you pull out any personal finance book, I think the first thing they mention is you only go to the ATM once a month. If you have got, say, $1,000 allocation for the month, you just take it out one shot from the bank, split it into four, and every week you just take out 250 and put it in a pocket. You have got more, you spend more. If you don't have, you just have to skip. That's a discipline.
Oh, yeah. I see. But isn't it, well, then you're kind of either keeping too much money in your wallet or putting it, where would you put it at home? I mean, it's not safe. I thought the idea was safety. You didn't want to carry so much cash.
Well, $1,000, $2,000, I think is fine. Mm. Okay, just put it in the drawer.
But I guess for high rollers like you and I, Shiraz, I was like, 10 grand under the pillow doesn't really work. I'm kidding.
Yeah. And I grew up with the whole thing where the Lord will provide. I mean, it switched from the Lord to credit cards. But, you know, the credit cards will provide. I mean, the whole point is that often we don't want to be so conscious about our money and our spending habits because it really does put a damper on the spontaneity of life, isn't it? I mean, it just takes the pleasure out of life somewhat, doesn't it, Steve?
Well, how do you strike a balance between spontaneity and being in control of your personal finances? I think if you have control over personal finances, you can probably think of spontaneity later. I think spontaneity is a luxury. You got to get your personal finances in check, you know, in control. Then only you can have fun, I think.
Okay, on that note, we'll take a short break. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to myself, Sharad Kutan, and Tan Chung Han. Because our guest today is Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer, Afin Huang Asset Management, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, a show that's all about personal money. I'm sure I couldn't with me, Tan Chung Han, and our guest, Steve Lim, a Chief Learning Officer at Afin Huang Asset Management. We've been talking about financial health, and you ended on a very interesting note, that sweet spot between getting it right in terms of managing your finances and having lots of fun, which I think is something that many of us committed to. I mean, the latter rather than the former. Okay, let's go to something that doesn't sound like much fun, which is taxes. Steve, how would you, how do you think people should approach the question of taxes?
Well, this is in relation to a half-year financial health check. Have you come across situation when you are doing your tax, okay, say you wait till the very, very last minute?
Like which is a standard, I always wait till the very last minute. I find it works for me.
Very last minute, while you're going down the deduction, you kick yourself every other line. I should have done this, I should have spent this, you know? But you can't do it anymore because it's already April. You have to commit those purchases in the calendar year prior to that to be entitled to the deductions. This is, now is June, okay? It's about time to look at that.
But then, you know, I mean, drawing from my own experience filing, doing the e-filing with my taxes, right? For example, you can only claim the laptop, the computer tax rebate for, I think, once in 3 years, Really, you know, how practical are some of these tax rebate or, you know, some of these tax policies, though? I mean, because, like, you know, if you're subscribing to this idea of, you know, having to do this financial check twice a year and then adjusting our, you know, purchases as such, right, to qualify for some of these tax rebates, but yet, you know, it's not something that is feasible, you know, it's not something that we can do, you know, every 6 months, right? So how do you kind of, you know, find that sweet spot there?
Some of the expenses, some of the purchases is probably lump sum, upgrading a laptop, buying sports equipment or buying books.
Reading materials.
Materials. Some are probably should be spent on a regular basis. For instance, if you invest in private retirement scheme, entitles you to the 3,000 tax deduction. Okay, you probably want to do it like on a monthly basis. The maximum deduction is 3,000. You spend 200, invest 250 per month from beginning to the end. For instance, if you just discovered in June that you want this tax deduction and you want to invest in PRS, you should be stepping up your monthly purchase to 500 rather than 250 so that you can get a full deduction.
Now, going back to this theme, Shirai, that you raised earlier, right? Because, like, how do you find that balance between having fun, so to speak, you know, versus, you know, doing that due diligence of making sure that you have your expenses in place to take advantage of some of these tax rebates, right? Because judging by what you just mentioned, I would think that it would require some substantial homework, right? Because, say, you got to go back to the October of the previous year when the Prime Minister makes his budget announcement and see if there are any tax goodies there. Make note of that, and then for the entire calendar year, right, adjust your spending accordingly. Then April, you know, that's what, a year and a half later since budget's been announced, then you key in the data, right? So it seems like there's a lot of homework for perhaps relatively little gain. No?
Well,
as opposed to, like Sharad says, just, you know, spend whatever you want. Lah.
Well, I like Steve's message better than yours at this point in time. Steve, tell us.
A dollar spent is a dollar earned. And you can just go to, I mean, just go Google. This morning, before coming to the studio, I just went into Facebook and I just pick out a table out of there. All the deductions come to 2017. It's very, very accessible. So okay. Might as well do a bit of check and do some adjustment now.
So what I hear Steve saying is that we're talking about future and forward planning, right? It's not that you should run out and get yourself a computer just because it's on the tax exempt list. It's that if you were going to get it, then you might as well do it now because it just makes sense. You'll get that that added benefit of a tax break. And you're saying that the system is not so convoluted or arcade, doesn't require secret information and initiation with, you know, dark rites in order to do that. What else on the list of things? Do you talk about portfolio investment and looking at what your money has been earning?
Typically, when you invest, if you invest at all, the yardstick is 10% of your disposable income should go towards some sort of investment, some sort of savings plan, so that you can achieve your financial goals or have a comfortable retirement when you retire. There are basically two things with regards to risk. Risk capability and risk tolerance. They are two different things. Risk tolerance is I may grow up as a very, very risk-averse person, maybe because of my circumstances, maybe because of my family upbringing. I'm loaded, I'm very rich, but I don't take risks. But risk capability is whether I can take risks or not. That will be a function of my financial well-being, I guess, my net worth. So I think we need to know our own capability and tolerance. After knowing that, okay, we decide how much risk we want to take in investing. And typically, in the middle of a year, the market would have moved left or right. Say my ideal asset allocation is 20% cash, 30% equities, 50% fixed income. That's probably a profile of somebody in their 40s, okay, who doesn't want to take too much equity risk. But look at the market today. From January to till now, most of the market would have gone up easily, equity market would have gone up easily by 15-20%. At this juncture, would your asset allocation on the equity exceeded the ideal 30%? If it has already exceeded, maybe it's time to scale back.
And real quick, it's not necessarily just based on your risk appetite, right? Because I think a big component to this is also what your end goal is in mind, right? Right? Because some people might have shorter term goals versus, say, somebody who's just solely focused on retirement, right? So, again, what kind of guidelines can you offer on that front then with the end goal in mind?
Investment is never for a short term, okay? If you don't have at a minimum 3 years horizon, just park everything in FDs. So if you have got more than 3 years kind of time horizon, say 10, 20, 30 years, that's the time you look at your risk profile and then look at the ultimate sum of money that you want to end up with and work backwards as to how much you need to contribute on a regular basis and what kind of return you need to achieve in order to get there.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about all these things. You constantly trot out little tips and you're saying these are the ratios or typically this, that, and the other. And I'm thinking about how we started. We talked about financial health and thing akin to, you know, your own physical health, right? But we all go and see a doctor. Right, and we trust that doctor who's got expertise to tell us how we are. I mean, you know, if you end up doing sort of self-medication and self-diagnosis, you might end up in a lot of trouble. Do you recommend that we take the services of a financial planner up? Are they enough in this country? Are they of good quality? And how would we even make those judgments?
I bet Steve will say, you know, the best ones will be found at Afin Huang Investment, right?
Oh, but he wouldn't say that because he's not trying to promote Afin Huang at this point in time. He's just having a conversation with us.
You see, the concept of financial planning or consulting a financial planner is probably not as popular here as in Australia, as in US and all the more advanced country, simply because I think Asians in general are not very accustomed to paying for service. We pay for goods, but we don't pay for service. We expect free advice, free this and free that. I think there are very good financial planners out there. Okay, you guys probably have interviewed quite a few. If you have got a very, very complicated financial requirements, okay, I think it makes sense to consult one. Let's say your tax case, yeah.
Right. Typically, how much does it cost to engage the services of a financial planner?
Depends on the complexity, I guess.
But give us a ballpark figure, range. Minimally, you're paying what? Just because, I ask this because a lot of us will think, I'm not even going to open the door and walk in and ask because, you know, it's going to be like thousands and thousands of dollars. How can I afford that? Yeah. What are we really looking at when we talk about those kind of services?
Most of the financial planner, the certified financial planner in market, they are probably charging a very minimal fee, a few hundred bucks. But when they sell a financial product to you, say a unit trust, they'll probably be charging a front-end fee, a sales charges. That's where they make their money.
Right. But also there is this broader agenda to basically engage or encourage more retail investment participation, right? We have spoken to the Securities Commission, and the various regulators. Essentially, it's to try and put more of these decisions in the hands of the investors themselves, right? As opposed to relying on these third parties, right? So, you know, I'm sure what you're doing, a lot of what you're doing feeds into that broader agenda, right? That's why you're here.
Exactly.
Steve, we're running out of time, unfortunately. So last word from you about financial planning and financial reflection. What would you say?
Don't run away from it. Face it. Take control of your finances. I would like to tell my kids to pursue their dreams, be a musician, be an artist or something like that. But ultimately, you have got to feed yourself first. So to take control of your finances, make sure you are well taken care of, then you can have your spontaneity and pursue your dream.
Oh, I love it. You still ended on the word dreams. That's so important to all of us. That was Steve Lim, Chief Learning Officer, Afin Huang Asset Management, helping us today to think about or to reflect on our financial health. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Tan Chung Han and myself, Sharad Kutin, we're ending up the morning, coming up shortly across the news and then Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.